Welcome to Slaughterhouse Stories. I hope you enjoy the stories I have for you tonight. Hello to all you things that go bump in the night. Hello to all you humans as well. Welcome to the show that brings you creepypastas, short scary stories, and dark horror-themed poetry from all across the world. This is the Slaughterhouse Stories Podcast, Episode 11, The Boys. I'm your host and narrator, Ghost Dream, telling you to lock your doors, get under your blanket, and keep the lights on. Remember, if you want to write in and have your email read on the show, email slaughterhousestoriespodcast@gmail.com with creepypasta requests, your own horrific recommendations, or your own real-life paranormal or horror encounters. Now let's get spooky. Leading off tonight is a story about survival instinct, and how it's not always as great as it seems. Society likes to treat survivors as heroes. Often, survival instincts are given a positive spin. But what if the truth is, the instincts didn't prove someone to be a hero? They proved they were a monster. And eventually, they couldn't handle that reality any longer. From the author Kolpik, settle in and don't be so quick to judge, and listen to the final words of Lacey Stroh. You may have seen a vague mention of this on the news a few years ago, or stumbled upon rumors of this on the internet, like I did. I searched for a copy of Lacey Stroh's final post, but I couldn't find the post anywhere. Facebook took it down within a few days, so I've been told. Most people don't believe this really happened, and the family members and friends who received this post aren't speaking. Well, most of them aren't anyways. After contacting many of the 172 people who were Facebook friends with Lacey, I finally found someone who saved the post and was willing to share it with me. Call me a sick bastard if you want, but I feel people should read this. There's a lesson in this sad tale, and that's why I'm sharing it. The following are the final words of Lacey Stroh. Believe it or don't, I leave it for you to decide. You never really know what you're capable of until you're in the thick of it. Whether or not to rush into a burning building, step in front of a bullet, or even take on an armed assailant isn't something you decide to do. No, you just do it, or you don't. There often isn't time to weigh the pros and cons. Public opinion will decide whether it's brave or stupid based on the outcome. I prefer to believe that most people are cowards. Or, to put it a better way, realistic. Self-preservation is deeply embedded in our instincts, is it not? I feel this way because I am a coward, the worst kind. I deceived another person so that I could survive. Hold your judgment until the end of my story. Not that I care what you, or anyone for that matter, thinks. No, I'm not telling my story to gain sympathy or to alleviate my guilt. I'm just tired of holding it in. I'm fatigued by all the people who think I'm so strong. I'm just so sick of everyone thinking I was the lucky one for surviving. I'm not the lucky one. Those who perished are. This isn't a story about cannibalism in some sort of survival situation. God, if only it had gone down like that. I think I could live with that. People looking at me, knowing that I consumed human flesh. Yes. I could almost certainly handle that. It's so much better than what I did to my best friend. Most of you know, Cindy and I have been inseparable since a very young age. We were as close as sisters. Hell, we married brothers. So we were going to be by each other's side for our entire lives. That was until Jerry bought that stupid boat. If we'd just stayed on land and had barbecues, camped out, gone to concerts, or done a million other things with our free time, Cindy, Mike, and Jerry would still be alive. I wouldn't be sitting in my room with a noose hanging from my ceiling. Don't bother calling 911 or trying to reach me on the phone. It will be too late. When my story is done, I'm going to press enter and then do the old gag and dangle. You know, it's kind of funny. You all think I'm some sort of hero. I'm a survivor, right? I faced insurmountable odds and I persevered. It's time you all knew the truth. I'm a murderer, and my weapon of choice was deception. There Cindy and I were, adrift at sea. We had both just lost our husbands, and we were both almost certainly going to die as well. We only had a few days worth of food, a flare gun with only one shot, and a desalinator. Looking back on it all, I think I decided almost immediately that she had to go. My plan was formulated during our first night in the life raft, and once the initial shock had worn off, I put it into action. Our food wasn't going to last long, and I didn't know how much water the desalinator could clean in a day. I just knew it would go a lot further if she was gone. Well, you know she was found with me on the life raft when I was rescued. So how did I kill her? Maybe I wouldn't be so racked with guilt if I just whacked her with an oar and let her drown. That's awful enough. But what I did was far worse. What I did was evil. We were both so distraught with grief. Jerry and Mike went under when the boat did and never resurfaced. Jerry deployed a life raft, and Mike gathered what supplies he could grab. But neither of them made it off the boat. Mike went down in the hold for more supplies, and never returned. Jerry went to see what was taking him so long, and then suddenly the sea just swallowed the boat. It was there one moment, and the next, all that was left was some debris, and a bubbling froth where the boat had been. Some of you might say that it doesn't work like that. But that's what happened. It was there, and then it wasn't. I'll admit, I had my hands full keeping Cindy calm. She'd been slicing a lime for our drinks when we hit something, I guess. It happened so fast that I don't really know what stopped the boat, but it was made immediately clear that the boat was sinking. Jerry inflated the life raft and ushered us onto it. Mike went back into the hold, and Cindy just lost it. She somehow still had the knife in her hand. She was struggling to get back onto the boat, and I was so worried she'd puncture our only chance at survival. If only I had just used a knife on her then, she wouldn't have had to suffer like she did. We screamed and yelled. We hoped, and we waited for them to resurface, but they never did. Cindy was inconsolable. We clung to one another all through the night, and I'll admit that her show of weakness sickened me. It was then that I decided she had to go. Cindy wasn't a survivor. She didn't have what it takes, and I wasn't going to let her pull me down with her. I decided then and there that her ignorance and blind trust was how I was going to get rid of her. I supported Jerry when he first talked about learning to sail, and I was there for all the research and classes. The two of us became pretty competent sailors, but we just didn't have the experience. I researched online and learned about desalination. Jerry thought it was a waste of money. But one of my stipulations for allowing him to get a sailboat in the first place was that we had to have the latest and best in survival equipment. Cindy didn't know how to use the desalinator, so it was up to me, and that was how I did it. Oh, she complained about the water tasting so salty, but I assured her that the salt had been drawn out of it. I pretended that my ration tasted awful as well. She never once considered that I, her best friend, would give her straight seawater. You see, most people know not to drink seawater, but how many of you really understand why you shouldn't? I knew it dehydrated you faster, but I didn't think about all the side effects. Maybe if I'd known. No, I probably would have done it anyway. The sooner she was gone, the better chance I had of being rescued. What haunts me the most is that I had plenty of ways to do away with her, but I chose to watch her slowly fade away. Languishing in delirium and pain, rather than let her know that I wanted her dead. I forgot how allowing shame to influence one's actions only brings about a much greater shame. I love Cindy with all my heart, but it seems I love myself more. Go ahead, tell me I wasn't in my right mind. Tell me I shouldn't blame myself for wanting to survive and doing whatever was necessary to do so. Tell me you would have done the same thing. You can fool yourself, but you can't fool me. Besides, none of you really believe any of that. I am evil, and if I had to do it all over again, I know I would. I'd feed her poison day after day, and console her with overwhelmingly positive stories of people who survived much worse scenarios than ours. I even told her on her last day alive that I saw a ship in the distance, and we were saved. I don't know why I lied, but she was too far gone to understand what I said, or to even care. Her last words were garbled and incomprehensible. I'm so sorry, Cindy. I love you. You're my sister. I never put much thought in the afterlife, but it has to be real. I have to find you. I need to tell you how much I love you, and I will never leave your side again. You have to be out there somewhere. You just have to. I'm coming for you, Cindy. I'm so sorry. I'm so very sorry. Lacey Stroh's final words haunt me. We may be social animals, but our minds are solitary creatures, armed with razor-sharp instincts that only care about the preservation of self. Ask yourself what you would have done in her position. If you're really honest with yourself, then maybe I won't be the only one that doesn't sleep well anymore. Lacey couldn't handle the truth of who she really was any longer. But really, how many of you can be 100% sure that you wouldn't have done the same? After all, it's true that there is a hero inside everyone. But it's also true that inside all of us is a monster just waiting. Except for me, I'm a very angelic ghost. You would see my halo if this was a video podcast. But I digress. From Lacey's final message to messages from beyond, Pacers Nation 16 wrote a story about a man and the crow he trained that acts as his messenger, or at least he thought it was his messenger. Unfortunately for him, he learns too late that this crow acts for someone else, someone with ill intentions. Keep your windows shut and ignore your mailbox while you listen to The Messenger Bird. That note was overpowering. I recall the inevitable discomfort it delivered. My stomach sank as I scanned the image before me. It can't be, I spoke to myself. It can't be. Earlier that day, I was resting in an old, creaky chair that seemed to struggle to support my weight. The rest of my house was similar in quality, for it endured several years of wear and tear. As I relaxed in my chair, I was accompanied by only my cup of coffee and my newspaper. A familiar fluttering noise echoed through the room. The flapping of wings dissipated. My eyes followed the rotting wood floor to the fading blue paint on the walls. Slowly, my gaze pushed its way to an accustomed sight. It was a crow standing in the windowsill, carrying with it my mail for the day. However, this crow resembled nothing close to an ordinary bird. I had trained this crow. He delivered my mail from the mailbox and delivered letters I had wished to send. Along with his ability to allow me to indulge in sloth, he also kept me company, for I seldom had guests over. I stretched out of my chair and was greeted by an early morning piney scent. I made my way over to the sill and picked up the mail. As I gathered my letters, I noticed something peculiar. I remembered soon that it was a Sunday. Mail never arrived on Sundays. I recalled that I had received mail the following day before, so I thought it was a bit odd that mail had come on a Sunday. I just brushed the oddity aside, however, and didn't really think much of it. After tumbling through the mail, I found nothing more than a couple of coupons and some advertisements. I ventured my way to the trash and was on the verge of discarding my letters when I was shocked by something. I had somehow overlooked an envelope. I decided to inspect the peculiar-looking letter and discovered very little normality about it. It had a black coloring to it, which differed from any envelope I'd seen before. There was no address on it, and really nothing I could recognize. My eyes were swiftly directed to the juxtaposing bright red seal. Alice Est Debalus Corvus. I was baffled by the phrase. I had no clue as to what it resembled. The picture in the seal was rather unsettling, as I recognized a pitchfork over what appeared to be a pool of blood. I overcame my mixed feelings and began to quickly rip open the envelope. The paper inside emitted a terrible odor and looked rather aged. I covered my nose and read what had been written. The message was vague and intriguing. It said, "The Father rests on Sundays, but I do not." This had baffled me. I began to ponder what it had meant, but soon noticed something. The seal had Diabolus written on it. This word meant devil in Latin. I quickly ran to my computer, eager to translate the phrase, but before I could, my crow had been chirping for me. I looked over. He held yet another letter in his talons. I noticed the letter covered in that recognizable black coating. I slowly unwrapped the note, and it just read, "Join us in hell." This seemed to be a bit frightening, and I felt rather unsafe at this time. Before discarding the note, my crow arrived with three more envelopes. I was startled. All had the same black coating, and I questioned whether or not to open them. My curiosity overpowered my sense of reason. I once again felt uneasy as I snatched the notes. Reluctant to open, my eyes were familiar with the same exact seal. As I unfolded the note, there was no writing. It was just a bland white sheet of paper. Then I noticed texture on the back of the letter. I turned over the note and I saw a picture. At first, it appeared to be a simple frame of my family at the dinner table. But then I looked closer. I noticed the picture had been taken from outside the house and through a window. I'd never seen this picture before, and it was unclear who had taken it. The image depicted a long, dark shadow reaching from outside over the dinner table as we ate. I remembered this moment, but I had no memory of any photo being taken. The next envelope looked no different from the last. As I opened it, I noticed once again it was a picture. I was startled as I flew back. What I had seen had disgusted me. A few years back, my brother had gone missing, and he was never discovered. This event occurred following my mother's death. Many of us believed he had killed himself due to the close bond he shared with our mother. Anyways, the picture that I held in my hand, that my eyes gazed upon, was an image of his severed head lying next to a tree in the woods. Much like the last image, there was a dark shadow sitting over his head. I turned and dropped the notes. I had to figure out what the term on the seal was. I typed in the words, praying for it to be nothing threatening. I soon discovered what the phrase meant, and may have been better at not reading it. The phrase translated to, "The crow is the bird of the devil." Things began to be more clear. Someone was pulling a sick prank and trying to scare me, but could this be the murderer of my brother? I wasn't sure. I decided it would be best for me to open the last letter. I walked over to the pile, but before picking up the last note, my eyes jumped back to the picture of my family eating at the dinner table. I was startled by a vague reflection in the window. I made out the face, and it was my mother, standing next to her, my brother. I decided this wasn't too odd. But then, I looked at the timestamp. It read December 12, 2012. The photo was taken 2 years following the death of my brother and mother. I also gazed closer and saw them holding no camera in their reflection. I then picked up the other photo and soon realized I'd never checked the back of it. My sweaty palms flipped the image over to see eerie writing. It read, "The moment my first son joins me." This completely scared me, and I had to sit and think. The crow being the devil's messenger, was it some sick prank, or did it mean something? Was this bird my messenger, or was I receiving a message from hell? I had to open the last envelope. My fear was inescapable, but so was my curiosity. As my trembling hands picked up the last note, I was worried for my life. I sluggishly peeled open the envelope, and my quivering hands tried their best to pull the image out. That note was overpowering. I recalled the inevitable discomfort it delivered. My stomach sank as I scanned the image before me. "It can't be," I spoke to myself. "It can't be." The picture was an image of myself, standing just as I was, reading this very note. It was as if the picture had been taken of me this very moment. I noticed the absence of any dark shadow in the picture, but I saw a small message at the bottom of the picture that said, "Turn it over." My heart racing. I flipped the picture, and my shaking eyes did their best to decode the text. It read, "The moment my second son joins me." Filled with fear, I turned the picture over again and noticed the reflection of both my mother and brother in the window. But quickly I noticed something more. Daylight had evaded me. There was a growing shadow creeping from behind. My head swiftly turned, and there I found the owner of the shadow. It was my mother, and she spoke.
"Join us in hell."
Isn't it always a wonderful moment when a family can be reunited, and the devil is the one who reunited them? I don't know why that guy gets such a bad rap. Speaking of evil things, it's time for this week's horrific recommendation. Now I know that most of you will know about this movie, but one, someone may not have seen it, and two, even if you know it, you should watch it again. My favorite horror movie of all time is this week's horrific recommendation, Halloween. In my opinion, Michael Myers is the perfect horror villain, unspeaking, unfeeling, without mercy. And Laurie Strode is a fantastic final girl, so innocent and so easy to root for. There's so much I love about this movie. It's got humorous moments without diminishing Michael Myers. It's got scary moments, good fakeouts and feel-good moments. And of course the ending, where the monster known as Michael Myers. If you haven't seen the original Halloween, go watch it. Not now though, but right after the show. And if you have seen it, also go watch it, right after the show. Now that I've given you this week's recommendation, let's take a trip down to open mic night at Beazle Pub. Starting off open mic night is an old traditional song by an unnamed writer, although some people see it as less of a song and more as a set of instructions to journey to this realm. And to end open mic night, a poem by an unnamed author that again, that shows the dangers of letting the dead return to the land of the living. Lose yourself in the rhymes of "Into the Further You Go" and "Ash Mother." To start your venture into the fray, first you settle at the end of the day. Plead to prepare you for what you may see. You thank him for placing the fruits on the tree. And as the ticking takes you further below, into the further you go. You light your home with a single flame to guide you out and far from disclaim. Away from the smoke and what you may see. To flee back to safety, the light is the key. And as the ticking takes you further below, into the further you go. Close your eyes and sharpen your mind for all weariness you leave behind. Any links to love in the world must be shed, for what lies below longs to hide in your head. And as the ticking takes you further below, into the further you go. Meditate for an hour and a second. Keep your mind here and refrain from flexion. Contemplate the further and what you may see. Let your mind open and your soul be free. And as the ticking takes you further below, into the further you go. As you steady in this state, explore and venture, but do not wait for any company you decide to stem. Go on without, in here you can't see them. And as the ticking takes you further below, into the further you go. Take the candle you lit before and venture out of the nearest door. Your sanctuary is gone and your home disappeared. Welcome to the further and all that you feared. And as the ticking takes you further below, into the further you go. Normality now is to see blinking red lights near and around you in the curling rise of yellow smoke and fog. You were sure definitely was not there before. And as the ticking takes you further below, into the further you go. Your ears in the eternal night play tricks. Let the faucet overflows with the waters of Styx. The reddest lights continue to gore as the smoke leads you to the front of his door. And as the ticking takes you further below, into the further you go. A warning to all adventurers beware. The bodiless eyes bid a scarlet glare to alert that you're here to their invisible peers. Behind its door, their warnings he hears. And as the ticking takes you further below, into the further you go. If you grow scared, your journey must stop. The further comes alive to bargain a swap of their empty blackness for your beating heart. Go in through the door for the end to start. And as the ticking takes you further below, into the further you go. On the other side of the gated way, the flames of hell much further away. Hideous thoughts and smells abound. Their faces spin around and around. And as the ticking takes you further below, into the further you go. They stare at you from a single frame, their mouths moving quietly and uttering blame and hate for you and all that you've done. You'll feel to end, your mind will run. I count at three the time I went. In a tall mirror, their faces bent and curved around like a painted frown that one could find on the face of a clown. These are the faces of the people you've lost, the ones you envisioned and the ones that cost. Your heartache and longing for months on end. Your thoughts of goodbye, up to heaven you'd send. But no, here they are, they swirl in the mirror. Down in the further, life becomes clearer than anything that could have sparked the idea to share a midnight somewhere but here. In front of the glass, you lose your mind. Crouched in the dark, the door behind. You'll hear it slam shut, regardless of luck. Inside the further, you're stuck. In the dark where evil sleeps, where sanity is useless trash, I tell a tale to give you creeps and inspire true fear of things that slash. On a quiet All Hallows Eve, when rain did drizzle from the sky, two siblings from their home did leave. Not dressed as ghosts, but end was nigh. While friends of theirs did candy find, among the houses that they passed, the siblings were of a different mind. To another house they hurried fast. They had been promised a lovely thing by a man with long, sharp teeth. If they came at midnight's ring, they'd raise their mother who sleeps beneath. The ritual was long and harsh. Twice they fainted dead away. Their blood was marking every hearth. When lit, they marked the spirit's way. And in a scream and rushing wind, one sibling stared upon the other, dead and fallen in their sin. He had not seen their risen mother. From the hearth snuck blackened grate, a crawling figure made of ash, pulled herself in and sealed the fate of her two children as she moved fast. The living child gazed on in horror as Ash Mother swallowed the dead sibling whole. Their mother was hungry, was now a terror. She smiled at the living child, bloody and cold. The other child ran, but did not get far. Teeth now sank into her arm, and she shrieked. Ash Mother didn't notice her child's alarm, and with crunches, she put her child to sleep. The Ash Mother waits in that house all alone. Her children are gone, and her hunger remains. Dare you to enter, and you will atone. For the sins of the siblings, you will feel their pain. In the dark where evil sleeps, where sanity is useless trash, I've told a tale to give you creeps and inspire true fear of things that slash. Does anyone know where to find a man with the sharp teeth that can bring the dead into the realm of the living? Asking for a friend. Before we get to tonight's main feature, I'd like to ask you a favor. Please head over and leave a review through iTunes and help spread the word to your friends, family, the 17 people you have locked up in that warehouse. Whoever. Tell them. Be a listener, not a victim. And now we move into our monthly feature, stories written by me that aren't a part of the Newcastle Chronicles. This is Slaughterhouse Originals. This month's story is about a woman born with a special ability. She can see into my world, the spirit world. and all manner of ghosts and spirits have paid her visits over the years. In most of these stories, having this special sight helps survive an attack from the paranormal. But trust me, it doesn't always work out that way. Please, close your bedroom door, stay away from the mirrors, and enjoy my story, The Boys. My whole life has been one paranormal vision after the other. Doesn't matter where I am, there's always something. Old house, old ghosts. Old building, dead employees. New house, someone died on that old piece of land 145 years ago. It just doesn't matter. I've tried to explain things to my husband Bill, but he never believed me. At least, not until we moved into this new place. We've lived here for a couple of months now. It didn't take long before everything started happening. Things being moved or just outright missing. Noises like bodies being dropped on the floor. Screaming in the middle of the night. It's even affecting Bill's mood and personality. He used to pity me and go check on the noises in our old house. Or humor me when I wanted to search around the house to see if I could find the reason for the haunting. Now he just screams at me when I wake him. Or tells me not to go snooping around because of my stupid imagination. Recently, it's gotten really bad. Every night, I wake up at 2:46 a.m. and there's just this woman curled in the corner of the room. And she's shaking and dirty and crying. I look down the hall and there are four men dressed in suits and ties. They look like mobsters and they're staring at me. Every night, they just stare and get just a bit closer. Like they were trying to intimidate me. Last night I woke up, and the woman wasn't in the corner anymore. This time she was crawling on the floor, crawling towards the bed. I woke Bill up, and he just started screaming at me, and telling me if I was just going to wake him up every night to play make-believe, he would just have to go sleep somewhere else. So he stormed out while ranting and stomping. As soon as he walked through the woman, she disappeared. I told him everything was fine now, but he just cursed at me and slammed the door. Tonight, as I was getting ready for bed, we were watching the news. They started talking about a missing woman and showed her picture on the screen. It was her, the woman I'd been seeing. I turned to Bill to tell him, but I stopped. In the mirror, on the wall by Bill, I could see us, but Bill wasn't Bill in the mirror. Bill was someone else, dressed like a mobster. He looked up into the mirror and saw me. I turned to get out of bed, but the other four mobsters were standing over me now. Bill grabbed me by the throat and squeezed tightly. He explained to me that Bill had been gone for months. That the woman I'd been seeing was just somebody that he and the boys found on the street. That everything would have been okay if I would have just kept my mouth shut. Now, as my vision begins to fade, the last thing I hear is the voice of my husband say, "I'm sorry, baby, but we can't leave any witnesses." Well, Sarah, sometimes these gifts can turn out to be curses. Maybe you really should have kept things to yourself. Now you don't have to worry about people thinking you're weird for seeing into the spirit realm. Now, you can just call it home. Now I believe that is enough scares for this week. I hope you will join me again next week for more stories that are sure to keep you afraid during the day and awake at night. Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed the stories that I had for you tonight. And until next time.
Stay spooky.